Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 429.
This week on the podcast, New York is the only place on Earth insane enough to continually come for Amazon and win.
And Trump's phone logs, or lack thereof, are the latest in his ongoing quest to one-up Richard Nixon.
Plus, the White House is very concerned about the effect of inflation on the defense budget, not as concerned about it impacting your ability to eat.
And known liar Madison Cawthorn finally gets in trouble for telling an absolutely unbelievable story that's also probably his first true one.
Plus, the KBJ SCOTUS hearings prove once again that the GOP cannot think of anything other than child pornography.
And America's least favorite slam poet is ready to bring crazy sentence syntax back to Washington.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We're going to like studiously avoid the most important story of the last 3 weeks because it's also the least important story, which is to say that if you're looking for hot takes about the Oscar slap, look elsewhere.
Right. We were talking about whether to talk about it. And then I remembered that it's the Grammys tonight. And I had read a bunch of stuff about like how the Grammys are like a powder keg right now where like, first off, they're in Vegas and everybody's hating their lives in Vegas right now. All these people out there. Right. And like every single person who's there is like, why is this in Vegas? And then also, like, there's this whole thing with, like, Kanye West where he got nominated a bunch and he was supposed to, I think, perform, but then they pulled him because... So everybody's worried that, like, Kanye is going to, like, do some sort of, like, Will Smith
right.
thing. So I was just sort of like, you know what? This podcast is going to air on Monday. I guarantee you there's going to be the slap by the time anybody is even listening to this podcast.
Also, I learned on a Fox News ticker earlier today or yesterday that the drummer of the Foo Fighters also just like up and died.
Yeah, he did.
Which, can Dave Grohl like catch a break? I mean, good Lord.
Yeah. Sad.
In any case, the Grammys are going to be a whole host of things.
I know.
So, and I actually, instead of talking, I wanted to use this top of the podcast moment to instead talk about the Trump hole in one statement because that's actually my favorite news of the week.
It was so good.
It was so good. One of the greatest Trump statements that has ever been released. It sounded like it was written by a seventh grader that was doing a parody of Donald Trump.
Right. Or it sounded like a press release from like Kim Jong-un is really what it sounded like.
Totally. Right? But Kim Jong-un translated. It didn't sound like it was written in the original English. It begins with many people are asking, so I'll give it to you now. It's 100% true. But the thing about it was that was the day we found out a judge said that Trump might be, you know, have to stand trial. And so nobody was, in fact, asking about his hole-in-one. And also, as my mom put earlier on our family chat, when my aunt was like, I've never gotten a hole-in-one. And my mom was like, well, neither has Donald Trump. So... This is
Carla. Well, yeah, she's probably right about that.
Yeah, this is a statement that's pure fabrication, but I love how much detail he put into it. I mean, it's a really dramatic retelling of an event that probably didn't happen. Most especially because, as Stephen Colbert pointed out, I think it was Stephen Colbert who pointed out he says that the ball made a clank as it went into the after bouncing twice, and that is not actually the sound that a hole in one makes after it's bounced twice and gotten into the hole. So it's He was adding some dramatic embellishment to the story anyway.
Yeah.
But also, once you're embellishing the story, you might as well make the whole story up, which is also what he did.
Right.
So, but I just love that he said, like, people are asking as if anyone has asked. Right. I love that
the entire country was on their mind.
Right? Like, I love that we all found out about it from the statement because no one had been asking. But then we were like, is this a real statement? This reads like a spoof even for Donald Trump. And then I read it in the Post and I was like, wait a minute. And then I saw it in the Daily News. Like suddenly it was in real newspapers. Like my level of seeing it in real newspapers slowly increased where like the first place I saw it was the Post and I was like, still could be fake.
Oh, that's what I was just about to say.
And then I saw it in the Daily News and I was like, maybe it's real.
Did you just say
that
you saw
it in a real newspaper?
Right. I'm like, did you just say that you saw it in the Post and then immediately say that you'd seen it in a real newspaper? Is that what just happened? Did I hear that right?
Yes, but not to imply that the Post was that real newspaper.
Okay, good. Just checking.
In any case, I think in so many ways that was the most important story of the week. That got severely overshadowed by the fact that Donald Trump might actually have to stand trial for, you know, committing crimes against high crimes, not fake crimes. In any case, the actual most important story of the week is the Amazon Union.
Guys.
And this is an important story for a lot of reasons. One is just like, fuck you, Amazon. That's obviously the first reason. But also, I think the labor movement has really needed this moment because it's needed some new heroes. Because I think one thing that's been happening is like, you know, companies like Amazon spend a huge amount of money trying to defeat unionization efforts. We know that. And we also know that union organizers go about their work in very specific ways because that's a profession that people have. Union organizers work for unions and they try to unionize people. And in many cases, they're successful, and in other cases, they're not. I think what was so interesting about this unionization effort, especially in light of the recent Amazon vote that did not succeed.
Right. Although they're
very
re-voting.
High profile. Of
there,
course.
Because
well,
they
yeah.
were allowed to, because of course, you know, the NLRB found that Amazon was up to, you know, fuckeration.
Shenanigans. So,
yeah.
But I think what happened here was that somebody who actually had worked in the, you know, had worked in that fulfillment center and got fired for protesting the working conditions. This is, you know, in the Staten Island. And led a walkout and then got fired. And it was very obviously retaliatory. But he was not a professional union organizer. He was just some guy.
Yep.
And he just got pissed off and was like, fuck it, I want to start a union here. And he did. And the reason that he did it is because he actually did it in a grassroots way. I mean, I think that there's some real lessons here for, like, you know, Amazon accidentally made him famous by trying to smear him. But they tried to smear him by, like, arresting him for trespassing and, like, all this stuff that just made them look like assholes. And then he was basically just out here, like, using a GoFundMe with his friend Derek to, like, you know, have cookouts and, like, chat people up at bus stops and have s'mores with people.
Who's still
like
working
that.
There. But
who's still
Derek
working there. Yeah, Derek Palmer, the other organizer of the union, is still working there. But, I mean, they just used regular person skills to go and talk to people, and they knew the issues on the ground because they worked on the ground. And Amazon spent all this money on consultants trying to fight them, but they weren't fighting union organizers. They were fighting workers. And I think that is really the lesson. I think, you know, for so long, labor bosses have been looking like bosses everywhere.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's so much harder to villainize, you know, people who are just like working at the fulfillment center.
A guy from the
fulfillment center.
Right. And, you know, the company still did, they held their mandatory meetings to tell people to vote no and they threatened people or whatever. But it's so much harder to turn this random guy, Chris Smalls, into a big union boss enemy.
Right.
He's obviously just a guy who actually knew the issues and actually had the interests of workers at this fulfillment center in mind.
Yep.
And it was Amazon tried to play the game as if he was a professional organizer.
Yep.
And then in the middle of all that, as Chris Smalls himself pointed out, Jeff Bezos like went to the moon and things, went into space and like left them there thinking there was no way they could possibly pull this off.
Yeah.
But like, I think this is the sort of example I think that the labor movement really needed, where it's not like some big union came in and helped them organize this. It shows that what the labor movement is and always has been and always should be is regular workers deciding that they want to bargain collectively because that's in their best interest.
Yeah.
And they don't have to be special people, and they don't have to be lawyers, and they don't have to be people who look like the bosses that they're trying to, you know, that they're trying to take on. I think the sort of attempt that Amazon made to discredit Chris Smalls.
Well, they even arrested him, which probably was not smart on their part.
I think that was a very dumb idea.
Have helped their cause. Yeah. Arrested him for trespassing while he was handing out food. Maybe that wasn't their best plan, but I mean.
But I mean, like, this is actually what labor organizing looks like. And I think a lot of the time we get examples of it that look like people who went to fancy schools wearing suits trying to organize people working on the line or working in the factory or working whatever. And the sort of imbalance that people have for years been witnessing in labor unions, where the union brass don't have any background doing the work that the people who are in the union actually do. Or if they do, they're very far removed from it at this point and are mostly lawyers and people like that. That's not what a sort of grassroots labor movement actually looks like. And that's not how a grassroots labor movement actually succeeds. Yeah. But this is how that happens.
Yeah. Well, and that's how we're going to talk about Starbucks in a second. But, you know, there's been because there were also some
New York stores recently.
But like that's how, you know, that's been happening all over the country,
mm-hmm.
Including, you know, in Seattle, basically like Starbucks is front door, you know, but I mean, it now is also, it's just, there's some more stores in New York, but I mean, that has looked the same way, right? I mean, those have been people
totally.
in the stores, like in those
right. It's regular people who actually work at the job deciding that they deserve the right to collectively bargain, which everyone should have. And the big deal, the other big thing that happened in New York was that it was not just a regular Starbucks in New York that unionized. It's their flagship roastery, which is those fancy big stores that they've been setting up. And it's a huge store.
Yeah.
And it's in my neighborhood in New York. And I am often like, what is this Starbucks? They like have a liquor license and like it's like wild in there. It's like several stories. But they also... voted to unionize this week, which is a big deal because that's really the flagship Starbucks in New York City. So that big week for labor in New York City, and also very exciting week.
And, well, and really nationwide. I mean, it was in New York, obviously.
Yes.
And like the, you know, leading
well, the
that,
Amazon
certainly,
news
and
the, being and the, one, yeah.
Right, certainly. But I mean, there has to be a ripple effect from that, right?
Totally.
I mean, it seems like that's already been happening, certainly with Starbucks all over the place. But, you know, we had already seen one fulfillment center in Bessemer, like we said, fail, but that was, unfairly run as an election, so they're going to redo it again. I gotta believe that this is, especially after some of the insane shit, people are dying in Amazon factories and things like that. I mean, like, this will not be a one-off. It just won't be. So,
well, and it kind of reminds me of, like, what I always think about with voting is, like, listen, you can make it impossible for people to vote and you can do your best to take away their right to vote and you can lie to them. But you ultimately like have to deal with the fact that there are always more people who don't benefit from, you know, corporate robber baron stealing everything than do. And like at a certain point, there are enough people in a lot of these factories who would benefit from unionizing who know that. Who, you know, maybe there's a few attempts where Amazon does something sneaky, or maybe there's, you know, the media does not do a good job of portraying the benefits of these kinds of of unionizing and the benefits of these kinds of struggles. But once you have the example, you have something. And
yeah, exactly.
And then you're really working against people's self-interest in a pretty overt way. So I think like having the example is critical because that allows you to have the kind of success with these votes where even if they do try something sneaky, then there are enough votes to cover for that, which is, I think, often what, you know, that's often what happens when you see like really surprising election results in places where they've tried overtly racist things to stop people from voting. It's like everyone's just like, well, then I'll wait the 12 hours, whatever. Yeah. I'm not going to let them take away my vote. People don't like having their vote taken away, so they show up anyway. Like, so you don't want to do the thing that shows people that if enough of them show up, they could do a thing, which is why Amazon's trying to make all these votes fail. So this is a really powerful example anyway.
Agreed.
But in any case, very exciting times. Exciting times for the labor movement. Exciting times if you lived through Watergate because you probably never thought that you would get to live through it a second time. It's so funny because, so, you know, there was the headlines in the last couple of weeks that were about the call records gap, the 7-hour gap in Trump's White House call records. And I am a person who was not alive during Watergate. I literally learned everything I know about Watergate from Slow Burn and the song Alice's Restaurant. And I am... also a person who already knows that Trump has committed crimes on a greater scale than anything Richard Nixon ever dreamed of. Like, so these are things, like, I already know that, like, Trump is a bigger crook than Richard Nixon. I already know that there are so many issues with the White House records from the time that Trump was in office that are probably, there's probably 30-day gaps somewhere in those, right? I mean, you know. He was famous for tearing up memos and sensitive materials, and they were having to like tape them back together.
Right, the National Archives is taping.
You know,
them
they're they're famous for shredding records and putting them in burn bags and having them destroyed. I mean, so like these are things that Donald Trump was already famous for doing before this all happened.
Yeah.
But I read a headline about a 7-hour gap in the records, and I gasped.
I know.
Just because I was like, not the call record.
I know, and it was so funny too because you texted it to me. And I was like, text me back when he's in prison.
I know.
So I did not, apparently for whatever reason, did not have the, I get the reaction. And I don't think that you're crazy for having it.
No.
But
I was just like, once the call records are involved.
Yeah.
Well, it was just, Because there's some, like with Donald Trump, I've always said, like, he tells you exactly what's on his mind in the moment. Sometimes he's telling it to you by lying to you in an obvious way, but like, he tells you exactly what's on his mind. And also, we all know via common sense what he's up to all the time. He's always doing whatever the most narcissistic asshole would do in a situation. So you never have to use your imagination to really figure out right. what he's up to. And so we know for a fact that in those 7 hours, calls were made. And we know that because people told us. We know that because other eyewitnesses have seen, have mentioned multiple calls. There were the calls to Tommy Tuberville. Those are not in the record. He left somebody
a voicemail thinking that he was leaving a different person a voicemail.
Right. right?
I mean, exactly. when he was trying to get a hold of Tommy Tuberville or
Tommy
whatever
Tuberville, he called the wrong senator. Like, these. So we have, like, lots of proof from just, like, regular reporting.
Yeah.
That, like, he was calling everyone during this period of the gap. And so it's, like, not even like with Richard Nixon where we were like, there's a gap. What did he say during that gap?
Right.
Because with this, we already know what he was up to the whole time. We just had to use common sense to get there instead of records.
Right.
But, like, even with that, I was just like, I don't know, once call records are involved, that's when you know Congress actually could do something because they tried it once. Like, that's when I was suddenly like, maybe this committee, maybe the January 6th committee actually could do something because of the time that they forced another president to resign because he was about to get indicted.
Well, like, I feel like we're long past the time where Merrick Garland could probably have done something himself. Anyway, I feel like what this has driven, like, obviously this is a huge deal, and you're right. I think that, like, now that there's, like, something specific that it's just like, oh, he lied about this. They can move on this. Like, they're obstructing, you know, justice here or whatever. But, like, really, I think what it has done has just, like, driven angst that nothing has been done already.
Well,
right?
Exactly. Like, I feel like it's a thing that has parallel in American history where something dramatic happened as a result of the call record gap. And so when I read the headline,
I was like,
oh, this is something that I know causes something. It's not just like more of this sort of like random incongruous information where it's like, we know, because the thing is that the reason that that gap is there is because he was using other people's phones and he was using burner phones and he was using
but
whatever.
He doesn't know what burner phones are though, Lila.
It's funny because he had multiple conversations with John Bolton about what burner phones were prior to this that John Bolton has told the January 6th committee. So it's interesting that he all of a sudden has never heard of them.
Right. And also, as you reminded me, he's a wannabe mob boss. So, of course, he's heard of burner phones.
Right? He's a man who was literally tearing up memos in his office.
Yeah.
Like, this man has been using, he might not call them that, but he's been using them this whole time.
Right.
The reason that this gap is actually here, though, is there's a reason that's more sensible but more concerning in another way. Which is the reason is because he would have the White House switchboard make these calls for him when he was in the residence. But when he would go to the Oval Office, he would have random staffers do it or he would use other people's phones or whatever. So this is common that these gaps exist when he's in the Oval Office, which says to me that the presidential records, which I want to remind everyone, the reason we keep presidential records is because of Richard Nixon. The Presidential Records Act was passed in 1978, and it was passed specifically because Richard Nixon was not asked to keep presidential records and therefore could not be compelled to provide a lot of information that he should have had to provide about what exactly he was doing with taxpayer dollars up in his office all day. But the point is, the Presidential Records Act is very specific about what kinds of records are supposed to be kept about the president's activities. And there is supposed to be a second kind of record that keeps track of his activities because he can, you know, the Presidential Records Act does not keep, has not been amended to account for cell phones and other kinds of digital media. So the problem with the Presidential Records Act is that the White House switchboard does not make all of anyone's calls because the president can make calls on a cell phone. There is supposed to be someone, though, who is writing all of that information down. And that record is also missing. But also an Obama staffer already has acknowledged to CNN that this process basically works on an honor system and is dependent on how meticulous the aides are willing to be to serve this need. And so I think that what
you
this
said honor
to,
system and I immediately started laughing because I know that we're talking about the Trump administration.
Exactly. So what this says to me is that there is a lot of missing information that is not being accounted for.
That's an entire day. And as we remember, things were happening that day.
A very important day, a day where you might keep extra special records because you're like, wow, a coup is happening. That's pretty unique. But not if you're Donald Trump. If you're Donald Trump, you apparently made a few phone calls in the morning, including some calls to Steve Bannon, who the day before had told everyone that this was going to be a coup.
Right. Something was going to be happening.
You know, something big was going to happen. So he made a few calls to Steve Bannon in the morning. then for 7 hours was just out frolicking, I guess, and then came back in the evening and made a few more calls. Somehow, during that time, people received phone calls from him, but they don't show up on any record. So that's an interesting problem that we're trying to solve. In any case, I feel like this is interesting to me for two reasons, one of which is, like I said, I think that a gap in the records is something that has parallel in American history, and so many things in Donald Trump's kind of criming don't. But also, I think it speaks to a very specific paranoia that Americans have, because that actually, like, means something to Americans. Like, a gap in the call records means something very specific. When you say that, you're talking about presidents being up to full shenanigans, not presidents who were just, like, frolicking and forgot to write down what they were doing. So I think that the fact that even I gasped at that headline, and I know that this is one raindrop in a torrent of rain of just like a, in a torrential rainstorm of criming that the Trump administration has been up to. But I read the headline and just reflexively was like, the call records. You can't have a gap in the call records. And like, I just want to remind everyone that the Nixon gap was 18 minutes. We're talking about a 7 hour gap right now.
Right.
So, in any case, there was just something highly sort of.
No, I get it.
You know, it's just a gap in the records. And not even the, I mean, Nixon was taping himself. So we're talking about a gap in just like a paranoid person taping himself, not even the call records. But like the gap going on that long, the gap happening at a time where we know he's doing other things and we have proof that he's doing other things.
Yeah.
The fact that that's the information they handed over to the January 6th committee, and the fact that a judge had just said that he committed crimes where he could stand trial. Like, so many things were happening with Trump that week. And this is, I read the call records. By the way, you can read them on the Washington Post. It's kind of fun. In any case, exciting times. Exciting times just because it feels like the magic words might have been said was my read on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means anything anymore, because who knows if anything means anything anymore.
I was going to say, I feel like you're right. I feel like we have felt that before. But
I know.
Maybe not to this degree. I don't know. Who knows?
I feel like it was significant that a judge said that he had likely committed crimes. That was, to me, where the story kind of began and why I think this news caught me the way that it did.
Totally. Yeah.
But in any case, I was studiously avoiding the SCOTUS hearings because I was just like, well, these sound like they're just going to be like grandstanding racism.
Well, and that's exactly what they were. I watched more of them than maybe I would have usually for an weird reason, probably, and it was because I was happy to be looking at something on the news that was not like a literal 24 hours of people being at war with each other,
right?
Which is
fair.
Which had been what, you know, was on CNN all day, essentially. So, which I could not watch, and so I just hadn't. I feel like the last month I've probably been more woefully uninformed about the world than normally I am, although that's not really true because I'm still reading the news. But in terms of just sort of, you know, usually I'm working from home always, and I just like will throw the TV on. And it's usually just like the news, even though the news here is terrible. But like, I mean, I still throw it on. So I was like, ooh, good. It's not people killing each other today on the news.
Right.
So I watched a reasonable amount of them. And yeah, you're right. I mean, like, we're going to tell you about some of the more ridiculous things that happen. And like, look, I pulled most of the notes for this specific section of the podcast, and I didn't pull many specific things about like how particularly well she handled herself in many instances, because I think you can broadly say over the 3 or 4 days or however many it was, is that she handled herself very gracefully, and she is obviously very intelligent, and she handled, you know, herself well throughout, and her responses were appropriate and they were thoughtful, and she's clearly a person who's like more than qualified to be on the Supreme Court, more so probably than like 6 of the people who are, or however, you know. So like, I feel like
the only person who I believe think,
as we do an entire story on the stupidity of Ted Cruz in the face of, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson, like whether she is or isn't qualified at the Supreme Court. Like, that's not in question. And I guess whether Ted Cruz is an idiot isn't in question either. But, I mean, I think the only thing that, like, anybody was interested in this entire week was how stupid the GOP would make themselves look. And so that's really what we're going to talk about here. Because the answer is very.
It's, I mean.
That's how stupid they
make themselves look. And that's, I feel like the big takeaway I have from what I've read about this, what my mother has complained about, and then the notes that Brent has taken, is that the GOP is like absolutely obsessed with child pornography and just pornography in general. They can't stop thinking about pornography.
Yeah, I mean, that was the main thing that they were really hitting her for, was because for some whatever reasons, which she explained, you know, literally 100 times, to the point where finally she was just answering the questions with like, see my previous answer, was that she like gave some sentences that were like technically under like the federal guidelines, but there's a million different reasons why those guidelines are like out of date, and has something to do with like how many images you can sort of like get at once, like on the internet. Like I think some of those like used to be like per, you know, like they were sentences like per image that you had or something like that. And now like, you know, in one fell swoop, you can get a million. And she wasn't trying to say that it was like, that's better or worse, but like, it's just not, the guidelines aren't appropriate. And the Senate Democrats were also being like, we have to change those guidelines because that's a congressional thing that like we need to change in the law. But they kept bringing it up because like on a technicality, they were right in the sense that like they were less than whatever the federal guidelines were. So they were just spent the entire 3 or 4 days making it seem like she was in the bag for child pornographers, which like clearly is not
also
a thing. That's not real.
What an outrage, like, that really, to me, says that they had, like, nothing on her, because this is a real stretch.
Obviously, and they didn't bring any of this up when they, you know, during the hearings for her to, you know, sit on the D.C. Circuit. So it's, like, it's not something that they had even previously cared about. But, like, also, it's less about, you know, they did it for two reasons. One, because their base is, like, this really sort of, like, bleeds into a, you know, sort of, like, Q base. You know, kind of like the look, there's, we told you, she's a part of the, you know, the
child trafficking
liberal
ring.
Cabal, you know, Pizzagate, whatever's going on with, you know, all of that nonsense. So it speaks to that without, you know, speaking directly to it anyway. And then additionally, it goes to their ongoing plan to make Democrats look weak on crime going into the midterms. Like they think that is going to be a win for them, and they're going to do anything that they can to keep banging that home. And so they felt like this was a great opportunity for them to do so. It wasn't because they actually, but they all know she's going to get confirmed, right? I mean, like, and they all probably like secretly think that she's qualified. In fact, I can't remember who it was now, but some senator came out today and said that she's going
to
be great and she's going to be history making and she's totally qualified, but I'm not going to vote for her. So like they know, right? The only reason they were doing it was just, it was electoral, really, is why they were doing it.
Yeah, of course. Which is the only reason they do anything, because they're not doing anything in there.
Exactly. But there were some wild exchanges that we're going to talk about. The first one being from Senator Marsha Blackburn, who asked her if she could provide a definition for the word woman. And she appeared confused, and she said, I'm not a biologist. And then Blackburn chided her, saying that the fact that you can't give me a straight answer about something as fundamental as what a woman is underscores the dangers of the kind of progressive education that we're hearing about.
Soon people will just be running around willy-nilly, unable to scientifically define a woman, which I would guarantee that probably most members of the Senate can't do with any accuracy.
Hello.
Like, I mean, that's... The GOP on science this week has been a real, because was it Lauren Boebert or somebody who decided nobody should make any decisions about sexuality or gender until they're 21?
No, I had not seen that.
I think that was also this week. And
yeah.
As someone pointed out, does that mean that no one can be straight until they're 21?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, you heard her. Uh-huh. No straight people until age 21.
Yeah.
In any case.
But imagine, you know, the one thing that I will say about her, and while she, like, look, there were so many shenanigans going on. It's, I think the way that we know that she has the temperament to be a Supreme Court judge is that she didn't strangle Ted Cruz and, like, actually just, like, kill him in cold blood with her bare hands during this hearing. Like, that to me is enough proof that she should get 100 votes to be confirmed to SCOTUS. Because any lesser human than her would have done so. I do love, there's like a few mashups of like some of her, and they're subtle. Like, she never like made like huge facial reactions, but like her face did do the thing that your face is wont to do when somebody asks you during a hearing to be on the Supreme Court what a woman is, right?
Right.
Like, and so I enjoyed a lot of those mashups of that, because look, she's human and her face did what her face did a few times. So some of those are kind of fun if you wish to see her reacting to some of the insanity. Like Ted Cruz trying to get into critical race theory and then reading children's books to her. He really loves a good children's book moment, doesn't he?
He loves a children's book. Well, I think that his problem might be that he doesn't enjoy an adult book. I've never heard him mention an adult book. The fact that he routinely mentions children's titles says something about his reading habits to me.
Yeah.
So apparently he's pretty concerned.
Yeah, she's on the board at the Georgetown Day School, which is like this elite private school in Washington, D.C. And so that he was like going through some of the books that are like not like even on, in the curriculum necessarily, but are on like reading lists, like, you know, of like approved books for children or whatever. And he made a few of them national bestsellers also.
Yeah.
Because people decided that they wanted to read these books. But he was like, he had a whole stack of them, and one was like Critical Race Theory and Introduction and The End of Policing and How to Be an Anti-Racist and Anti-Racist Baby. But specifically, Anti-Racist Baby and Stamped for Kids like became like immediate bestsellers.
Well, you know what's funny is I feel like this is actually a problem that I think a lot of people face, and I face it because I like to buy radical children's books for people who have kids. And I'm always looking for a good political primer for tiny babies. It's hard to know which ones are good and which ones are bad. It's hard to know which ones to look for. Yeah. It's hard to know what topics are being covered in children's literature. I don't have kids. I don't keep up with children's lit. And so I think what he offered was a helpful list of the kinds of books that you might want to buy your friend who's about to have a kid or your friend at their kid's first birthday or whatever.
Yeah.
That a lot of us have been trouble. You know, we all have our favorites. We all have our A's for activists or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, it's hard once you get past that first birthday to keep up the thing, to keep up the tradition. Yeah. And I feel like he gave us some good options.
Yeah, you can go to Ted.
Americans
Ted
were looking Cruz, for those.
The Ted Cruz, like, unapproved list.
Banned book list.
Banned book list, yeah. That's where you find it. Or you just go to the reading list from the Georgetown Day School.
Right, apparently all of these.
Right, yeah. And by the way, if you're wondering whether these people were really doing this just to grandstand, the proof came from Ted Cruz himself, who was being screen hacked by a journalist who snapped a picture of him right after this line of questioning happened, and he was checking his mentions on Twitter.
Yeah, that's exactly what this has all been about, is Ted Cruz's mentions on Twitter. He was giving, instead of engaging in important state business, he was giving a campaign speech for himself.
Yeah, exactly. Lindsey Graham has been dragged by a lot of people for this, including members of his own party and people of all religions, because he asked probably like the most ridiculous, well, I don't know, they're all ridiculous. The Marsha Blackburn, like, what is a woman? That's insane too. But anyway, regardless, I'm not going to rank the ridiculousness of these questions because they're all insane. But he said, you have a wonderful family, you should be proud, and your faith matters to you. What faith are you, by the way? And so she started talking about how she was a non-denominational Protestant, but then he cut her off and asked her if she felt that she could fairly judge a Catholic person. And this is another moment where her face did a thing.
Just like,
and
what?
She said, Senator, I have a record of judging everyone. And he said, I'm asking this question because how important is your faith to you? On a scale of 1 to 10, how faithful would you say you are in terms of religion? You know, I go to church probably 3 times a year, so that speaks poorly of me. Or do you attend church regularly? And she said that her faith was very important, but also pointed out that there's no religious test in the Constitution. But like, scale of 1 to 10 was like too dumb.
I would like to point out that what I take away from Lindsey Graham's question is that only atheists should be on the Supreme Court. It feels like if he's concerned that people of a faith can't fairly judge people of another faith, only people of no faith should be on the Supreme Court.
Well, he later went on, the reason that he was doing this was clearly disingenuous. I mean, surprise, right?
Really?
But
I am shocked.
I know, you're shocked. The reason that he was doing it was because he got back around to this at some point, was because people were questioning that crazy cult that Amy Coney Barrett belongs to as a reason that she might not be able to fairly judge people on the Supreme Court. But, you know, that
I take his question at face value and assume that he is implying that religious people should not serve on the Supreme Court, which to me says that we should just try a new court, start again.
I mean, I'm certainly in favor of that. Different people.
I was saying to somebody that recently that I was like, you know, that that Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote about how, well, we won't have true equality until 9 women, or, you know, what would true equality look like? And she said 9 women serving as justice on the Supreme Court or whatever. I decided I won't be happy until there are 9 Sotomayors serving on the Supreme Court. I just want 9. I will not rest until Sonia Sotomayor is serving in all 9 positions on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That's my new goal, aspiration.
She's great. She's going to get confirmed. We know that Joe Manchin is going to vote for her. We heard that
Susan Collins has lied to us before, but she said she would.
I know. Susan Collins, a woman who is just in favor of anyone being on the Supreme Court.
People who violate her direct principles, people who she said she would never vote for, people who she will vote for, she doesn't care.
People who are rapists.
Anyone.
Just, you know, Susan Collins, she's just there for a good time. Susan Collins.
That's right.
I almost said she's just there for a good time, not a long time, but she's also there for a long time, unfortunately.
I was going to say, if only she was only here for a good time, not a long time. That is not, sadly, what her plan has been.
No. All right. Well, anyway, so that's that.
That's that. In depressing Biden news, his proposed budget this year is just a budget where nothing much is different except for that we increase military spending by 4%. It's the largest military budget ever in American history.
Yeah.
It's $813 billion. That's a $31 billion increase in defense spending. And why? Well, it's hard, you guys, because A, there's Ukraine, which for some reason means we have to, even though we literally spend more money than the next 11 countries combined, and we also spend 10 times what Russia does on its military already. But apparently inflation, it's because of inflation. Now, sadly, inflation does not seem to be a major concern of theirs when it comes to the kinds of public benefits that people pay out of their own pocket.
Right.
And sadly, we pay our American tax dollars to a government that does not care about whether we can support the neediest among us with, you know, as inflation ravages their lives. And sadly, we only have a $7 an hour minimum wage because we don't care about inflation at all.
Yeah.
But for the military, inflation apparently our number one priority. Apparently, we need to keep up with inflation when it comes to buying weapons of war and otherwise, like, just sort of engaging in wasteful spending for a department that cannot survive an audit to save its life.
Right.
It is impossible to audit the Defense Department. We don't know what this money goes to. We have guesses. A lot of it goes to bullshit, too. We know for a fact that a lot of it goes to bullshit, in fact. But I mean, like, we're talking about the most bloated budget in the entire government. They can't survive an audit, and we just keep increasing it, which is, I think, a parallel to what Eric Adams is trying to do in New York City right now, which is also just cut everything except the police budget, because apparently the police who are having a murdering problem here apparently are doing all that murdering because they don't have enough weapons. That's got to be it.
This is another bill, and I have said this about previous bills that have been supposedly must-pass bills that they need to burn down. There's enough votes to kill this, and they should do it. And I say that, I've said it about 10 different things in this presidency, and people call me crazy.
It never works.
And it never works. But, like, at some point, like, what are you doing there if
this
not
is
voting
a no.
no on, you know, a giant increase in the defense budget, right? Enough members of the House who have spoke out about doing this in the past, and they have also, like, it was not that long ago that we were talking about all of the bills to, like, reduce the defense budget by, like, 10 or 15%. Do you remember this? Like, Barbara Lee or whoever it is that, like, has introduced these bills that have a ton of co-sponsors and are supported by, like, multiple senators and stuff like that. Just vote no on this. And I don't care if it's his whole fiscal year budget for 2023. I just don't care. Like, you have to start voting no on this shit.
Also, I feel like, how often are we told that things that cost less than $31 billion are impossible?
Right.
Like, I think that, you know,
well, they're currently quibbling over, like, $10 billion to, like, make sure that we can continue to test people for coronavirus, for God's sake.
Exactly. Like, I feel like these sorts of conversations are sort of, I think, more frequently becoming becoming sort of national conversations. But like, because we are so aware of how important COVID relief money is, because we're so aware of how helpful the child tax credit was and how many people it lifted out of poverty, like, because we're aware of the cost of these kinds of programs, because we were quibbling over them for, you know, a billion years, and we had to do a cost breakdown of everything that was in, you know, every COVID package that never passed and blah, blah, blah. We are well aware that we are frequently told we can't afford things that cost $30 billion.
Yeah.
And yet to see this sort of like, well, but we, you know, they're going to need it for the military is like such a slap in the face to just like people who pay their taxes, which is everyone except for Jeff Bezos. So it's just like, I think that like, you know, 4% doesn't sound like a lot until you realize how big the military budget actually is.
Yeah.
And then I think once you realize that 4% of the military budget is $31 billion, which is a program that could probably lift, you know, lift millions of kids out of poverty or something like that, it starts to be like a little bit like I just like don't have time for everyone's bullshit.
Yeah. Yep.
No one has the time.
Nobody has the time. This might be my favorite story of the week. Madison Cawthorn. Oh, and his cocaine-fueled GOP orgy fest story.
It's too good.
Yeah.
It's too good.
So, if you hadn't heard, Madison Cawthorn claimed on a podcast that he has been propositioned by elder GOP members of Congress to come to what are essentially orgies. Mm-hmm. And he has seen members of Congress doing cocaine and has been offered cocaine.
Right. He was on a podcast called Warrior Poet Society when he first mentioned the quote sexual perversion that goes on in Washington and said that he was asked to join a quote sexual get together at a politician's home.
Yeah.
So keep in mind, Madison Cawthorn is 26 too. He's the youngest member of Congress. So he's, and I think a more important thing to know about Madison Cawthorn before you invest too much in this story, which I think invest everything in this story, obviously, this is probably happening. But Madison Cawthorn is most famous for being a liar. So there are so many layers to this story that are amazing. Like the first one being that like, yeah, they probably are having orgies and doing cocaine in Washington. I can't imagine who else besides the group of people that were tapping their foot in men's restrooms secretly, which is Republican men, or that have been, you know, caught with hookers, all, you know, caught in the DC Madam's book or whoever, like who other than those people who have been privately engaging in all of the acts that they shame people in public for committing, who else but them would be having an orgy with cocaine? I mean, I feel like a lot of Democrats I can think of are not cool enough to attend an orgy with cocaine and also probably don't have time. Like I don't, like Katie Porter is probably not out there attending orgies with cocaine because she is a single mom of three. But I feel like Madison Cawthorn is the kind of guy who is available for that sort of thing. So, of course, he's getting propositioned for these sorts of things. But also, it's important to remember that he's a known liar and that this is, whether or not this is a lie, and I would suggest it's probably not, this is really the first time he's gotten into trouble for one of his quote-unquote lies, which I think is amazing because he's told a lot of them. And that includes, I mean, he's told lies about how he sustained the injuries that left him in a wheelchair. He's told lies about his resume. He's told lies. He said he was accepted to Princeton and Harvard once, which was a lie. He also recently got in trouble because he called Zelensky, like the president of Ukraine, a thug who supports, quote, woke ideologies. That was the same week that he was charged with driving with a revoked license. So he's just like a mess.
Yeah.
And we know about his wife issue. I mean, he's been having relationship dramas this whole time.
Yeah, may have been married to like a Russian who was spying on him or something.
That's right.
Something to that effect.
Yeah, he was married to a Russian spy.
Right.
So that
he met at some like a fake CrossFit convention or something. Like
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, a CrossFit inspector slash Russian spy.
If that all sounded crazy, go listen to our podcast where we dove fully into that story.
Exactly. In any case, this time Kevin McCarthy's not having any of it. They've been having closed door meetings where Kevin McCarthy claims that Madison Cawthorn finally has, quote, lost his trust after just a mountain of lies since the moment he declared.
Yeah. Well, because Kevin McCarthy very well might be one of these people who doesn't want his orgies being discussed.
I was going to say there was an implication in Cawthorn's story that Kevin McCarthy might be involved.
Yeah.
So Kevin McCarthy in particular is feeling a little bit attacked in this moment. And I would suggest that Kevin McCarthy strikes me as someone who might be attending orgies with cocaine or doing cocaine.
Yeah.
Richard Burr, who doesn't seem cool enough to do either of those things, called Madison Cawthorn an embarrassment. But I bet that's just because he's an asshole who's scandalized.
Right. Yeah, I could see Richard Burr being scandalized by this. Like, it's interesting because, like, you really can see the two different, like, sides of the party there. And I feel like they are really sort of, like, you know, being, like, made clear in this story, essentially. Because it's the people who, like, are the members of the Republican Party, like, you know, Madison Cawthorn and Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy and any of these people
who are obviously attending orgies and doing cocaine.
And then there are the GOP members who are pretending to be scandalized, who probably actually are scandalized.
Well, I was going to say, there's like the hypocrites and the prudes in the Republican Party.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Right.
Like the hypocrites.
And sometimes they can be both.
And sometimes,
we're not implying that there's not like a crossover in the, you know, in the Venn diagram. Right. Yeah.
Exactly. But the hypocrites and the prudes, we already know who the hypocrites are. We've known.
Yeah.
The Republicans have significantly more sex scandals than anyone else has ever even dreamed of having. And that is why they're so obsessed with pornography, probably. And also why they're obsessed with the morals of the left. Because also, Madison Cawthorn is now pissed off for two reasons. One is that he believes he was calling out corruption. And I have a controversial contention to make here, which is, I don't think it's actually corruption if Republicans are having orgies. I think it's gross.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think it's probably hypocritical, but it's not the most hypocritical thing that they're up to. I don't know that that's a comment about corruption so much. I think he saw it as a comment about corruption because he sort of, you know, is part of this wing of the party that it claims that they're like tough on drugs and tough on, you know, bad behavior. And like they categorically are not. So they're tough on drugs if black people are doing them. They're not tough on drugs if white people are doing them, though.
Right.
That's why the entire country is dying in an opioid epidemic. So they couldn't care less about that. But also, when he made his comments about it, he also got mad because he said the left had seized on it.
Yeah.
And he was mostly mad that that left-wing media was reporting on it. And then basically made like an entire statement where he doesn't apologize for it, pretends he's calling out corruption, and blames the left. Never addresses the substance of his own comments directly.
Like, right, exactly. Well, I think he finally got to the point where after everybody had reacted to this and after he'd met with Kevin McCarthy like multiple times, you know, he kind of was at a point where he was left with a real decision whether he was going to own this, right? Or whether he was going to play the game and say, oh no, I'm sorry, and this didn't actually happen, and I was confused, and whatever. And he went with the doubling down. And so...
He owned it, but without saying what it was.
Right,
he, like,
right,
owned it in the weaseliest way possible.
Yeah. Now it seems like he's going to be, like, the hero of, like, really, like, you know, the moral outrage of the types of things that go on in the swamp, essentially.
Right.
And, like, look, maybe that's a lane for him. Like, I mean...
It's an interesting lane for him because he's... so obviously part of the swamp. It's also an interesting lane for him because he is in a very crowded primary right now and almost nobody thinks he's going to be reelected, and especially now because he's going to get no help from the RNC.
Well, that's what I was about to say. People are already coming out. I think Richard Burr, who has never endorsed in, or whoever the senator from North Carolina is, the elder senator, has never endorsed in a Republican primary in like a congressional seat because they just don't usually involve that, has like already... endorsed whoever his sort of like most reasonable, I'm using air quotes, you know, challenger is there, which, you know, Trump won that district, I think, by like an 11 or 12 point. So like, I don't know if, you know, the Republican establishment coming in and endorsing the Republican establishment candidate really does anything.
But
interestingly, Cawthorn beat in his primary the person who Trump had endorsed when he ran.
Right.
Remember that? He was not the Trump endorsed candidate in that race.
Yeah. No, that's a that's going to be a wild.
It's going to be a wild primary.
I'm not
normally
invested in Republican primaries to that extent, but I feel like this is maybe one to keep your eye on.
Yeah, we'll watch it. Yeah.
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 In any case, there's also been some, you might be aware that there are some progressives that are interested in asking the Biden administration to use their executive powers to do anything for anyone. And apparently there was a closed door meeting with progressives, but also a closed door meeting with like the new Democrats. So like there was a closed door meeting with everyone this week, where everyone tried to pressure Biden to do whatever they wanted, and then they all canceled each other out and nothing happened. But the progressives went in there with the idea that they were going to pressure Biden to, like, do something with executive action about anything.
Yeah, well, like, so just, right, earlier this month, like, a bunch of progressive lawmakers, like, released a whole roster of items that they wanted to see Biden enact, like, immediately that he could do by executive action, to the point where I think a lot of them were even drawn up for him. And so they were, it was all in preparation, like, leading up to this meeting, essentially, and they were going to just, like, go in and, like, lay it all on the line. And just be like, here are all of the things that we think that you should do. You know, Jayapal went, and she's got an almost 100-member caucus, but, like, went in with, like, executive actions for, like, lowering drug costs, forgiving student loan debt, urging them to raise the overtime threshold and expand renewable energies to decrease reliance on fossil fuel. And there's, like, this weird, like, family glitch in the Affordable Care Act that he could fix with an executive order. And they were just sort of like, do all of these things, sir. Like,
right. Just.
And the new Democrats.
Do try something.
And the new Democrats, bless their heart, are living in a fantasy land that.
Of 1992.
Can almost not even be imagined because. Look, I agree with them to some degree here.
Sure.
Because they're, what they went in saying was, we need to pass things through legislation.
Right.
And they are not necessarily wrong. Susan Delbene, who chairs the New Democrats, said, quote, the number one thing we need to do is get bills to the president's desk. And she went on to say, to show governance is working, to provide certainty and to have an impact over the long term, we need to pass legislation. The better answer is always going to be that Congress acts. And maybe she has been living in some alternate reality where Congress is passing things.
Right. Where like, that's like, the better thing is to have a Ferrari, but sometimes you buy a Toyota. The better thing is to live in a mansion, but sometimes you live in an apartment. Like, what an infuriating kind of logic, but also the exact kind of logic that New Democrats would have, where we're just like, let's stop anyone from trying anything by instead focusing on a weird process qualm we
Let
have
us keep
that can
doing
never be
nothing
addressed.
In Congress.
Because it would be better if we could do something, and so then we'll just keep beating our heads against a wall doing nothing.
Right.
Because people would rather that we pass bills. Yeah, people would rather that you fucking pass bills.
Yeah.
But you don't seem to be capable of it.
No.
So,
and
try
in fact,
something.
You, people, the New Democrat Coalition, were the ones standing in the way of some of this legislation to begin with. I mean, they ultimately ended up getting on board, but, like, you know, it's not as if they have been the ones who have been out there selling the Biden agenda. I mean, the progressives, this is just another example that it's important to say for when the time comes after the 2022 midterms, when progressives get blamed for everything that happened in the election, when the Democrats lose in a landslide, because that's probably going to be what happens. And it's probably just going to be because Biden doesn't actually do any of these executive orders.
Right.
But, like, this is another example of the progressive caucus. And I don't agree with everything that they've done, right? Like, I've got quibbles with them. But, like, they are the only 98 people in the House right now who are trying to save Joe Biden from himself.
Yes.
And the and the entire party, for that matter, from itself.
Yeah.
So just remember this meeting as yet another example of them pleading with the president to save himself.
Yes.
And he probably isn't going to do any of it.
No, because he's a New Democrat.
Well, that's the problem.
Like, he doesn't care what progressives want because the New Democrats come in and they're like, if we do anything, someone might have an opinion about it. And then they're, like, so afraid of people having opinions about them doing things that they don't try anything. They're like, until we can get 100% of people on board, we shouldn't even try anything is basically their governance strategy. Yeah. And then they're like, I wonder why nothing works when we're in office. Because the only thing that they can ever get 100% agreement on is Republican policy. Because Republicans don't fucking budge. So, like, you only can get stuff. The only thing that you can get through Congress right now is a Republican bill that the New Democrats sign on to.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that can get through Congress.
Yeah.
And that is because the New Democrats are sellouts and Republicans don't budge. And progressives are just like not going to vote for that bullshit. But the New Democrats will vote for literally anything if it looks like they've done something that no one can understand, because then no one can have an opinion on something you can't understand. So they don't have to worry about opinions if it's something boring and technical. But like they literally, like this strategy of them wanting to pass acts to me is a code for like the kind of bipartisanship that's actually Republicans.
Yes.
Driving things. Because there's no world in which, like, Democratic bill passing is working right now. You have to have Republicans because of these people.
Right. Yeah.
In any case.
Oh, boy. This is a story that sort of surprises me has not been more headline-making.
Well, a lot's been going on. The slap happened. You can't blame people for not knowing what's going on with Clarence Thomas.
I know, exactly. I mean, just imagine for a second to yourself, what would be going on Fox News right now if your favorite girl, Sonia Sotomayor's husband, had attempted to get the presidential election overturned.
I know.
Because that's what happened in these last couple weeks, we found out, by the way. Right. Because Jenny Thomas, Clarence Thomas' wife, was texting Mark Meadows all day, Trump's chief of staff, all day on January 6th.
On January 6th.
Telling him to overturn the election, to get Pence to overturn the election. There were like 23 texts. We found out about these because the January 6th committee got them from Mark Meadows, who complied, at least in some regard, with their request for information. That is insane, you guys.
Insane.
That's cuckoo. It's crazy.
It's criming. It's direct criming.
It's direct criming. Yeah.
It's not fake criming. It's right out there in the open.
Yeah, like in some of the messages, she indicated that she believed the election was stolen, shared with Meadows baseless like theories circulated online about President Biden and ballot fraud. She also called that the Democrats winning this election the, quote, greatest heist of our history. And look, if this, you do get into a little bit of a dicey scenario, which I will give the critics of how big the story is when it is the spouse or loved one of a person, right? Clarence Thomas didn't himself do this. But he heard cases on the matter and in some instances was the lone dissenter of the nine in some of the cases that came before the case or before the court about, you know, whether they were going to like relook at specific state elections or whatever. I can't remember specifically which one he dissented on, but like he shouldn't be hearing this, obviously.
No,
and not only should
he
not be hearing
himself.
These, he should 100% recuse himself. But like the fact that like there hasn't been the fury to get ourselves worked up to for somebody to be like, maybe we should impeach him. Maybe he should be removed from the court. Maybe
he should be removed from the court.
Maybe he should be forced to be resigned. And I'm not saying that just because it's Biden that would get to pick a new justice, although that certainly would be great to get another Democratic justice on there. Although Biden would probably be like, oh, I'll just nominate a Republican now because I don't want to
Biden's
upset
an
everybody.
Asshole.
But like, this is crazy, you guys.
Crazy also. If you're like, he heard cases that he had a loved one who was acting, who had an active interest in the case without saying anything to us about it. It'd be one thing if he had already recused himself from any case that had anything to do with this. And we could be like, well, he at least was honest with us about it and he didn't. But that is not what happened. What happened is people found out about this, and then he was like, oh, maybe in the future I'll recuse myself. But he's already heard a bunch of cases about this.
Yeah, and
there's already been a bunch of shit.
Has he even said that he would recuse
himself? No, I think that there was some speculation that he would, and maybe, but he doesn't talk, so no one ever knows what he's up to.
The Democrats got big mad about this, so mad that they decided to write a very strongly worded letter.
That's right. They love a strongly worded letter because you can't be mad at them for not taking an action that they didn't take.
Right.
A strongly worded letter is just a thing that anyone can just put up with.
And their solution to this is to pass some sort of Supreme Court ethics bill or something like that.
It's like, no, take action against Thomas.
Yeah, take action against Thomas. And also, like, I am not trying to be living in a country where one branch of government has to be telling nine judges how to act right.
Right?
They're the Supreme, that's the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Like, they should not need a bill from Congress to be like, don't be acting up. It's insane that, like, that's A, the solution that has been offered by anyone.
Right.
That's the level of anger that anyone has had. And also, like, that they're just the weirdness of being like, let's tell the Supreme Court how to act right to me is right. So weird.
Should we write a code of ethics so that they don't aid and abet in the overthrow of the American government?
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah, like, they need told? They need to be told that?
I wonder, my thoughts on this, as I was trying to figure out why everyone is kind of tiptoeing around it when it's, like, obviously an enormous scandal, was that they're trying to get the Ketanji Brown Jackson vote done before they raise actual big mad about this.
I could see
because
that.
I can see Republicans acting up like actual children.
Yeah.
If this come, if they sense that there's real consequences coming to their court members.
Yeah.
But this is so problematic and such a big deal that I can't imagine that, like, a strongly worded letter suffices to. I mean, like, I'm thinking about like what does the Judiciary Committee, who, you know, is in part, like, on the House side, who doesn't get to talk to these justices, but is sort of responsible for representing our interest, the people's interest in these situations, like, they're really just going to write a strongly worded letter, or are they going to try something?
Yeah. I don't know.
Hope that they try something.
I hope they try something, too.
But I can understand why they would try something after
I get that.
SCOTUS vote.
Yep.
But I also don't trust that they are going to do something after that. I just hope that that's the plan.
Yep.
My goal was to have that be the plan. If I were in charge, that would be the plan. Because I have been shocked that this was not a bigger deal, since this is an enormous deal. And also, like, if while we're investigating this, he shouldn't get to hear any cases or do anything.
Agreed.
Like, just the idea that he was secretly aiding and abetting the overthrow of the U.S. government should be enough to sideline him until we find out what's really going on, in the words of Donald Trump.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, Jen Psaki is taking her condescension hour to MSNBC.
Where it belongs.
Where that's exactly
this
where
feels
it
right. This is...
It really
condescension
does.
Hour is every hour on MSNBC, and so this will be very welcome there. It was less welcome when she was condescending to us about our own lives and livelihoods from the White House. But
I know. Can you imagine her and Claire McCaskill in a roundtable discussion with each other?
Oh, my God.
And Steve Schmidt.
Oh, God.
Who else? And Nicole Wallace, maybe. They are going to have a fucking blast together.
Oh, my God. They're going to love it. Oh, and they're going to get to, like, yeah, they're going to
just
love every moment of that.
Yes.
They are going to advance.
The amount of yucking it up that lot is going to do together is just.
The most objectionable theories about why things are happening the way they're happening that are going to be framed as the only reasonable thing that you could think. They are going to enjoy getting subtle shots in at the progressives. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that it's where she's always belonged.
Yep. I agree.
It's where she was meant to be.
Yeah.
Let's hope that Congress is not where Sarah Palin was meant to be, because she has decided to run for Don Young's seat. And listen, she's one of the greatest living slam poets out there. And I'll give her that.
Yeah.
We have seen her speak. We walked away in awe of something. It was one of the more bizarre experiences of my entire life. And if you get a chance to see her speak, I highly recommend it.
Oh.
Honestly.
It's a collection of words that you'll never get at any other moment in your life.
You won't get the metaphor. Like, it's a collection of mixed metaphors that you won't get anywhere else in your
life.
The
cadence is very weird.
The cadence is very weird / maybe poetic. I don't know. There's a lot of just, like, adding various American imagery, like eagles soaring and like random mentions of things like that.
Yeah.
That are like flags waving and, you know,
wheat
fields, like in the breeze. Like it's just like a collection of mixed metaphors about America delivered in a slam poetry cadence. And it's everything, but it does not belong in Congress.
I think it might.
Oh, well, this Congress, maybe, yeah. To be fair.
Do I want her to be a person who has been elected to public office? No, I don't.
No.
Am I going to be here for the Sarah Palin speeches in Congress? Yes.
Every moment.
Every moment of them. And I am not afraid to say it. I'm not a proud person, guys.
I want to remind everyone that Alaska only has one member of Congress. So if they elect her, this is it. this is Alaska.
They really should think long and hard about the representation that they're looking for in Congress. It's a crowded field. So it'll be interesting to see. Clearly she has name recognition.
And also they're debuting a new election system there. So it's also going to be chaos because they have a jungle primary two rank choice pipeline now.
I want to vote in that, guys.
I know.
Right, because it's a jungle primary where the top four move on.
Yeah.
And then they get ranked choice. Amongst the four of them.
What a time that's going to be. What a time.
Yeah.
I also love that Sarah Palin told Fox News, we need people like Donald Trump who has nothing to lose, like me. I would contend all of them have a lot to lose, and she in particular has a huge amount to lose by doing this, but whatever, what do I know?
Super embarrassing if she loses. And that'll also be fun. Might. Any outcome is going to be great.
I'm just excited to get to be a part of it. I'm excited to participate.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week. We're back on track out there. We're sort of reading the news.
Yeah.
Just, you know, thinking to ourselves and then sharing those thoughts with you, the American people.
We'll talk to you next week.
All
right.
Bye.